Thank you. Thank you. Welcome. Welcome back. Still sticking with us, I see. Fantastic. So we'll start as usual, just a slight relaxation, letting go of everything external, everything that's happened to you, is letting all that go, bringing the mind inward, relaxing, brightening the mind, making a strong motivation, prayers, and then a slight review of yesterday. So please get yourself into a comfortable, reasonable meditation posture. Drawing the mind inward. Becoming interested in how your whole body responds to each in-breath and out-breath. This is a field approach, so it's how your whole body is responding to each in-breath and out-breath. Then you begin to narrow your attention by scanning the body, identifying areas of tension, and releasing them naturally on the out-breath. And so you check up. What is the result of breathing out these tension? You check with your scalp and importantly your face. All your facial muscles now relaxed. Your jaw is unclenched. Your forehead smooth. The area around your eyes and between your eyes, very vast, very spacious. All of this causing ripples of relaxation, which gently cascade down your body and through your body and wherever they touch. All relaxation deepens, all tension eases. Noticing how your shoulders are dropping to a much more comfortable, more relaxed position. Adding a little stability into the mix by becoming aware of the rise and fall of the abdomen with the breath. Adding a little vividness to the mix by noticing that without any effort on your part, with each in-breath, the mind becoming brighter. With each in-breath, the mind becoming clear and sharp. And with a relaxed body and a sharp mind, you generate very strong Mahayana motivation. Bring it to the front of your mind and gently focus on that. And then if you're happy to do so, we can do the prayers, taking refuge, generating bodhicitta. Very powerful. Sangye chodam soke chunam la janju bardu dagni kyapsu chi dagi jin soke pe sonam ki drola penchir sangye drupar sho sangye chodam soke chunam la janju bardu dagni kyapsu chi dagi jin soke pe sonam ki drola penchir sangye drupar sho. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, by my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Thank you. Giving yourself a little stretch, movement. So just getting your mind into the right zone now, try to bring to mind any of the, let your mind touch on some of the topics of yesterday, some of the experiences of yesterday, what was the main point of yesterday. Just let your mind think like that for a moment, just bringing it into focus. When you're ready, just get yourself into a nice position, nice and relaxed. Take a sip of tea. Drawing the mind inward. Once more, just a few breaths, relaxing on the out-breath. Brightening the mind on the in-breath. So once more, let your mind reflect on the immovables in this practice, the immovables. The first group is without grasping, without distraction. What does that mean to you? Without grasping, without distraction. Reminding yourself how you deal with the different levels of the two difficulties in this practice, dullness and excitation. Remind yourself how you deal with dullness. Laxity. Remind yourself how you deal with excitation, anxiety, restlessness of mind. What does it mean when the texts tell you, don't be like a hitchhiker? What does that mean? But be like a kestrel. A kestrel. What does that bring to mind? We practice gentle vase breathing. What were the main points of a gentle vase breath? We know that it's not an essential practice, but could be useful. It can help the energies move from the side channels towards the central channel. And it's important to keep the breath natural flow. And it's called vase breathing because of the traditional shape of a vase, with a long neck and a rounded belly. And so the in-breath, like pouring water into this type of vase, filling the belly first, moving the diaphragm and then the chest. And as you release the breath on the out-breath, you always keep a little of the area around the abdomen. You keep the belly slightly rounded, slightly full, the lower abdomen. And the next breath, of course, straight into the belly again, but when you breathe out, again, not completely, always saving a slightly rounded, slightly full abdomen. Could be helpful for any meditation on the mind. Worth practicing and see how it feels with you. Thank you. So I wanted to ask or check if how your personal practice went this morning. If anybody wants to say anything, share anything, make a comment, always happy to hear. Yes, Stella?
Actually, this is about Tara. Because in that space, that awareness space, the image that appears in my mind is Tara. And I was confused because I kept thinking, do I grasp this image? Do I see this image as a distraction? Or do I stay with this? So I felt my mind the thoughts were coming about asking that question, and I could feel myself being confused. Mm-hmm. No. And I know that this isn't about that kind of practice, but I thought that you might be able to maybe give me a steer on perhaps
the steer is always the same. It's always the same.
Right, okay.
This is why with the review I always start with no distraction, with no grasping. Now, I know it can be difficult, especially if your main practice, you have a deity practice, then it might be difficult. But what you have to understand is this is not, to develop it, it is a section. It goes by section, right? It's a ladder. It's a developmental process. We don't add anything to that developmental process. You choose your object and you focus. And then it doesn't matter what comes to mind, whether it's really nice, how wonderful, or horrible. You deal with it in exactly the same way. You are never distracted and you don't grasp. So you don't add anything to the practice. But what you can do as time goes on, you can take the practice and enhance the practice of shamatha and enhance everything you do. Certainly the practice of shamatha will help with any deity practice. In fact, it'll help with any meditation that you do. But not the other way around. It never changes. It's a developmental process and you have to stick to the script. Now, there's quite a few scripts around, right? We know that. The script I'm using here is well attested. It's with the objects from Padmasambhava onwards, as has been discussed about Lama Alan Wallace. So that's a script, but there are other scripts. Whatever script you use, you stick to it. No matter who or what appears. Doesn't matter what type of sensory input, doesn't matter what type of mental input. You have to say to yourself, in this practice, at this time, I am developing shamatha. This is the road I'm on, right? This is what without distraction and without grasping means. But I do understand, I really do understand, because everything is so related. There's an interdependency here with an awful lot of the practices we do. But with shamatha, you don't mix it. You don't add anything to the mix. It's developmental for a reason. But as you grow in the practice, stage two, stage three, these are stage three and stage two, very high practice. You can then take that and enhance everything else you're doing, but it's not the same practice. Not the same practice. But we'll discuss this a wee bit more tomorrow, I think, because, we'll discuss that. But it's what you're describing, Stella, is a reality. It's what happens. So you always come back to the... I keep repeating a lot about distraction and how did it... This is all for the same reason. Why is it emphasized so much? Because it comes up in our mind all the time. We just have to keep reminding ourselves.
That's very, very helpful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome, really. Anyone else? Yes, Sherry.
Hi, Anne-Marie. Two questions. So one on the vase breathing.
Start with that. Don't give me two at a time. Okay. I have an old brain.
One at a time. I'll start with that one. Okay, I'll start with that one then. With the vase breathing, I was doing it this morning with the visualization of the channels. Okay. And I found it really, really quite a strong stabilization and quite focused. But then when I shifted my attention to the nostrils, I couldn't do the vase breathing and the nostrils at the same time. I don't know.
That's normal.
Okay.
It's only practice. It's only, and this is what I said right at the very beginning. A lot of people give up immediately because you can't, I'm trying to keep my belly slightly full and then I'm shifting up here I'm settling the mind in its natural state. The vase breathing should come after the vividness. So once you've got the relaxation, the stable and the vividness here, then the relaxation, but if your object is the breath, of course you're going to go back to that, right? So it's only practice. This is why it's worth spending time on this, just practicing it. Can I do anything with a full belly? Take a simple meditation, anything. Start, do your vase breathing first, and then all you're doing is keeping that belly slightly rounded. And you have to get used to feeling it like that. And we're not used to what we normally do with our abdomen is like that. And what we're doing is giving ourselves permission to have a punch. So once you get used to that, once you get used to it, for a lot of people, it won't interfere then. Once you get used to that, it's like people saying, I can't do this with my eyes closed. Yes, you can. You just need to practice. Yeah, but I can't focus on this and then do this. You can, but it doesn't come easily. But in the end, even if it does come easily, you might find it not helpful. It may be that one step that's just that bit too much, really. And because it's not essential. Like I say, when I had difficulty, and I mean, this is just what Lama Allen told me. It was just a one-on-one. He says, have you tried with it walking and get used to the feeling of it full when you're walking? I said, no. He said, give it a go, see how you are. And to me, it was much easier. And then I got used to it that way. So that when I sat down in meditation, it wasn't too bad. There was always that slight niggle, but over time that went.
Okay. So do you always breathe like that then? Or is that just when you're sort of...
I think there's a benefit.
Okay. Okay. So you get to the point where it's just naturally the way that you're breathing.
Well, it's like for some people, it's natural to breathe just from the chest. For babies, how do babies breathe? It's the abdomen, you know, the abdomen going up and down. But I'm not an expert on breath work. This is just something that was very targeted to a specific thing I was looking at. But if you've tried it for a while and you're thinking this is just distracting, put it to one side. Not necessary, but they say it's helpful. And I don't know about you, but I need all the help I can get, so I give it a go. What was your second question, Hen?
Okay, thank you. The second question was, so when I'm sort of meditating on mind and its contents, mental events, and, I'm watching the thoughts and watching all the feelings, sensations, everything, like a lot. But then I start getting into this feeling of, like there's a consciousness that's watching these thoughts that are like objects. Yeah. But I think that's what we're trying to get away from, right? We're not trying to sort of get this feeling of, it's almost like feeling like there's a self or there's a mental consciousness that's watching these thoughts as an object or as objects that are passing by. But, you know, yeah, I just, you know, when we're trying to think about emptiness or not thinking about emptiness, but I don't feel that that's compatible with, you know, how we're, you know, where we're trying to go to in terms of understanding emptiness.
Self.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's a remedy to sort of get away from that feeling of, you know, like a consciousness that's actually watching those thoughts as objects.
So we maybe talk about this more in full when we do awareness of awareness. Because you've had teachings on that before though, Sherry, right?
From you, yes. Yeah.
Okay. So at the moment, what I would say is this. Shamatha, on the whole, it's experiential, right? It really is. The study you do, the comparing and contrasting, on the whole, is done outside of the meditation. So when you're in the meditation, it's the experience, sticking with the very simple instructions. Just stick with that. Now, you will be aware, of course. You'll start noticing things, but you're not going to be that's just another thought to be grasped at. And it's very seductive. Because as soon as you mention emptiness, that has to be more important. So the mind goes right towards that. So the idea of comparing and contrasting comes to it. So it doesn't matter what comes on, just stick to the simple. However, you'd be foolish to ignore that. And so when you're out of meditation, think about it. Think about it. What am I, you know, in there, which level of consciousness am I? Am I really sitting in the state of consciousness, observing this, observing the mind? What is it that's observing? And that's very good. And especially if you do a little reading around that topic, just to top up your knowledge, but not in meditation.
Okay.
Yeah, not in meditation. Be aware, but it's only another thought. that will distract you. For some people, the thoughts that come up are very related to the five senses. And for some people, that's very hard to ignore. You know, for others, it's mental events of the past, the present, and what they hope for the future. And for the ones that fool ourselves very easily, I'm talking about, it's something that's intellectually interesting. You know, it's like that. It's like that. It's all distraction. It is all distraction, but not to be ignored. Especially if it's something like that, it has to be investigated, but I wouldn't investigate it then. Because the more you, well, you know what it's like, the more you revise and revise your own understanding of this, especially the nature of the mind, then you can put your mind at ease quite quickly with this. This is slowly, slowly, step by step. But however, you'll have that sorted by the time you get to stage 6 and 7, I would think. But at the moment, I wouldn't be involved in it in meditation. But it's a good question, very valid. What's happening with you? Well, what's happening now is a very much a sense of vipassana. Mm-hmm. This kind of questioning approach. It really is. It's kind of vipassana creeping in there, which is great, which is fine, but not at this stage, not yet. But I personally think it's to be welcomed. I don't think this is a problem. How you deal with it may turn into a problem, but the fact that it's arising is not a difficulty. Okay?
Oh, thank you, Vinray.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Anyone else? Yes, Taylor?
Venerable Mary, I have a question about introspection. I have a question about introspection. My understanding is that it is strongly related with the quality of vividness, right? So if our introspection is strong, maybe our practice will be more vivid and less dull. Would that be something? Is my assumption correct? And then if so, how do we increase the introspection without getting too tense?
I understand. Okay, so it's possible for it to come in relation. You cannot move a video. I have no idea. I'm not trying to move a video. Okay, there's something coming up. Okay, so it could manifest like that, for sure. But introspection at the stages we're talking about is really a quality of attention. It's the quality of attention. It's not a quality of the result of an action. Okay, so you're refining your attention so much, and your mindfulness is now at stage, once you've completed stage 4, is so strong that what's coming after that, it's not mindfulness as much. It's the quality of attention, which is introspection. Okay, so is it related to vividness? Yeah, sure. Because if your mind has wandered away, then you might as well have a dull mind because you're not on the object. So what is it that recognizes the mind has wandered and brings it back? Is it something hanging about in the mind going, hello, this is my job. Move out mindfulness, move out attention. This is my job. No. It's the quality of attention that's become so refined that it's noticing and bringing back. Will that help you with your vividness? For sure. For sure.
Then how do we increase that quality?
You increase your attention. It's to do with attention. At the moment, up until you've achieved, say, 4, yes, you will notice that your mind's gone onto something and you will bring it back. But the quality you're looking at here is, you can call it introspection, but it's not really. It's just noticing. It's just noticing. It's only once you've refined your attention to such a state that what emerges from this attention is this quality of introspection. And at the moment, we have to do this. We have to go, oh, the mind's gone. Oh, God, 24 minutes has gone. Jeez, you know, what was I doing 5 minutes, you know, like this? Oh, I'll bring the mind back. And we call that introspection. It's not really. Not what we're talking about here. It has the same type of function, but it's very coarse. It's very coarse. But the quality of introspection that we're talking about here is quite fine. And it emerges from the stability of your attention, yeah, and the quality of your attention. Thank you. Anyone else? Jenny?
I was just thinking, related to what Talia said, I was wondering with the introspection, is that a bit like the kestrel hovering? Sorry, the kestrel hovering and noticing what's happening and then making small adjustments in terms of the attention.
Seems reasonable. Yeah, seems reasonable. For sure, seems reasonable. I wasn't taught that in respect to that, but it seems more than reasonable that you would alter what you're doing. But I tend to, I think that's more than reasonable. It's more like the quality of the subtle changes you need to make. And maybe this introspection is a bit more coarse. I don't know. Nothing's coarse at level 5 and 6. Nothing's coarse at that. So it could be that, yeah. I have no problem with that. Not how I was taught, but it seems very reasonable. Seems very reasonable. I mean, I can imagine the kestrel as a little chick first learning to fly, you know. It needs a lot of coarse stuff to get it up in the air and keep it in the air. And only when it's been doing that a while and things are kind of refined can you do these little twitches. So it feels like that to me, yeah. Thank you, Jenny. Anyone else? Yes, Annabelle. Nice to see you, Annabelle.
It's just a comment, really. I just wanted to say that I was very happy that you incorporated the bodhicitta practices as well, especially yesterday, because I find that learning the shamatha is helping me a lot with calming my anxiety and settling my mind and helping with my focus on all sorts of things. But when I do bodhicitta practices with you, I find them transformative. I can't really put it into words, but they really, they seem so simple, but they really have a transformative effect. And it reminds me of, I think once when I did the Four Immeasurables with you at Land of Joy.
Oh, yes.
So I just wanted to say that I appreciate having both.
I mean, there are many meditations on the Four Immeasurables, many meditations on bodhicitta. I'm using the one from Lama Allen's book because I think it speaks to me quite clearly as someone from a more modern society. And it feels very real. Now, so do other, I mean, there's lots of bodhicitta meditations and many of them excellent. But I'm using the one from Lama Allen because they were the ones that kind of woke me up again. You know, when you're practicing something for a while, and you think, okay, I'll do a bodhicitta meditation, and you kind of, you know. But when I first heard Lama out many years ago, leading meditations like this in bodhicitta, it was, for me, it was transformative. It was like, yes, that's how I feel. That's how I want to feel. Here's my problem, you know?
Yeah.
And it was so clear. It was like somebody pasted it up on a notice board. You know, this is so clear. So the way he puts it is one of his many great qualities. One of the great qualities is very clear. Very little ambiguity with his teachings. I've never left his teachings yet having to guess what he was talking about. I do appreciate that. Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you, I'm glad, Annabelle. Glad. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? No. Okay. So if we go back to the 9 stages, if you've got that handout or it's in the book, just looking at that again. You have it in front of you. So as we remember from yesterday, it was stage 8 coming at this stage, where you can actually meditate for, you know, 3 hours plus. Not just meditate, sometimes people think if you sit for 3 hours and you keep trying for 3 hours, you're at this stage. This is not true. It's not true. We're talking about 3 hours here where you're in the zone and you never leave it. Right? So we are talking quite a high level here. So this is the stage where Padmasambhava Baba and reiterated by Lama Alan says, if you wish, this is a good point to, if you wish, to change your object to something more subtle here. You've already now, you've got rid of your excitation. You've got rid of your subtle, even your subtle dullness, that's gone. You've still got little latent tendencies. It's still possible for it to pop up occasionally, but on the whole, you've got this covered. That refined quality of mind, possible then to change it. And the change that he suggests at this stage that you want to try would be shamatha without a sign, sometimes called awareness of awareness. And from that stage on, you would take that through to shamatha. This is just a possibility. It's a choice. Now, stage 9, what you have here, what it says is attentional balance. The idea of balance comes up time and time and time again in Lama Alan's teachings, all the time. Because it's always a balance between grasping, attachment, between stability, restlessness. It's the mind that is so well balanced. And so this attentional balance means you're exactly there. There is a real balance. You're not one way, you're just like this, ready to correct this, ready to correct that. So attentional balance. And what you have here is what they call flawless samadhi. Flawless. You're not in shamatha yet, but it's flawless now. The effort, very little. Sustaining hours and hours on end. You'd look at a minimum of 4 hours plus here, completely in the zone. You are so familiar that that is your power. You're familiar with all the stages. You're familiar with the object. You're familiar with what can go wrong. You're familiar with everything to do with this practice. And when you're familiar with someone to something to that degree, your level of confidence is huge. It is huge. So the power by that is familiarity. Now, because of these latent possibilities, latent potential of having a bit of laxity, latent potential of having a little bit of excitation, possible to come up in the future, but it's never going to worry you because you'll deal with it so quickly. You know, disappear for a long time. It's just that latent tendency is still here. And whatever you do within this is effortless. At this stage, it's effortless, really. Maybe a little bit of push in the beginning, but after that, the whole thing flows. Completely effortless. And they say the quality with this particular stage is perfection. It just, they tell me that it feels like it's just absolutely perfect. If you've ever had a perfect day, if you've ever had a perfect anything, then nothing in this is going to push you one way or the other. You can't really improve it. You just have to stay there. There is nothing to add at this stage. There is nothing to take away at this stage. There's nothing that more reading can help. There's nothing that another teacher, a more qualified, nothing. You're there. And if you stay there, you will achieve shamatha, no problem. You'll slip right in. It's like you're on, you know, one of these access roads to a motorway. Once you're on that segue, once you're on that access road, there's nowhere else you can go. You're going to end up on the motorway, aren't you? It's like that, effortless. The experience is one of perfection. That's what they say. I can't wait personally. Sounds great to me. So that's that. The next thing I want to talk to you a wee bit about, although it's nothing to worry us at this stage, it's just if you're going through the 9 stages. When, from about stage, they say, it could be stage 5, but definitely from stage 6 onwards, and certainly if your object is the mind or the mind in its contents or awareness, but certain a certain stage, what's going to come up is what's called nyam. Have you heard of that? N-Y-A-M, nyams, nyams. Okay. Now, these nyams I want to talk to you briefly about, because we're at this stage now where nyams are going to come up, right? But these nyams really are only occur during very intensive practice. And very intensive practice, usually in solitude, when you're in solitude. And usually when you're in solitude for months on end. This is how Lama Allen explains it. And that's good to remember, because people who hear about nyams start believing everything on a nyam. You get people who have been practicing this for a week saying, oh, I had this terrible nyam. Is that right? Okay, good. That's fantastic. You had a nyam. Oh, good. So what I'm going to talk about to you about this really only tends to arise. Unless, having said that, there's always this proviso. Some people come to shamatha with propensities from past lives, and they can go seemingly quite quickly. They don't know it yet, but with practice, it seems to go quite quickly. So I'm not saying everybody's like this, but generally speaking, on the whole, these nyams only arise during intensive practice, when you're in solitude for months on end. So that's what I would say to start with. But they are really interesting. And so in Lama Allen's book from about, oh, I don't know, about page 100, 101, he talks quite a bit about nyams. And he adds it into the section on settling the mind in its natural state. Now, nyams from the Dzogchen tradition are described, and almost every other tradition describes them, as a kind of array of meditation experiences. Some texts talk about an array of spiritual experiences. I'm never too sure about the word spiritual, never. It seems to mean so much to so many people. I don't have that type of mind, really. Odd for a nun to say, but still. So this wider range of meditative experiences. Now, in Tibet, Lama Allen explains, these experiences tend to be explained in relation to demons. Demons, they talk about a demon of this and a demon of that. So it tends to be expressed in that way. Pretty much the same as in the Dark Ages and the Middle Ages, when people had something wrong with them. It would be explained away as like the demon of this and the demon of that. And some religious traditions, Christian religions today, still talk about demons. But I think this is, the way Lama Allen explains it seems reasonable. It seems to come across, you tend to describe it and experience it quite in relationship to your worldview. In relationship to your worldview. When Lama Allen did a year's shamatha retreat with a group of students in Washington State, in, he talks about 1988, he had with him Genlam Rinpa. Genlam Rinpa was the spiritual advisor for that year. And he is someone who very highly spiritually realized and was an adept with shamatha, had achieved shamatha. And he gave a talk to the students, and he actually said, now at some stage, these demons are going to occur. And they may present like this, they may present like that. And Lama Allen said, in the whole year, there wasn't one student, not one, who turned around and said that made it, you know, they didn't have any of these demon things, didn't really come up. What did come up? Hate, greed, lust, grieving, pride, jealousy. These are the things that came up strongly. And Genlam Rinpa seemingly just went, well, that's your own demons, that's fine. But the way they explained it was very ethnic. But certainly within this group and with other people I've spoken to, it seems to be this what tends to come up. These are our demons. Anything that arises like that, especially when you're focusing on the mind, when you're delving deep, you've got your snorkel on and you're past the waves on the top of the ocean, you're going deep and you're touching a more subtle area of mind. And these, you're touching on things like grief and pride, arrogance, lust, you name it, this comes up. but they all arise in the realm of our human experience. This is all our realm of human experience. If you delve deep enough, then what Dujom Limpa ended up saying, and he called it like an externalized projection of our afflictive tendencies. So for some people, strong lust arising, strong. Lama Alan says sometimes it can be very strong, and it comes out of nowhere. It's very shocking to the practitioner, but it's not coming from outside in. It's really a human experience. For others, jealousy, strong jealousy. Pride, arrogance, greed, sometimes strong confusion, and sometimes overwhelming grief. Depends on your own demons. Okay, so as Dujom Rinpoche says, it's an externalized, you brought it up projection of your own afflictions. This is not bad. It's not to be rejected. No, it's just to be understood as yet another thing that is not inherently existing, cannot cause you any pain apart from the energy you give it. And you do exactly the same thing. You observe its nature and you let it go. But when these strong emotions, right now, when these strong emotions overwhelm us, it's almost as if we have no choice. When lust arises, greed, arrogance, at that time frame, it's like it takes over your body, speech, and mind. This is how we are. It's a human condition. By the time this is happening, if you're developing shamatha, you should have the space now to observe. Give it no energy, without grasping, without distraction. You see it for what it is and you let it go. And if it comes up 100 times in one day, this is no problem. You let it go 100 times in one day. And it will become weaker and weaker because it has no power. None of this has power. Only if we velcro ourselves to it. Dujom Rinpa, Lama Alan, says it's crucial to understand that nyam can be the result of absolutely correct practice. It can be the result of absolutely correct practice. Sometimes it's the result of misguided practice, for sure. But it can also be the result of correct practice. You're delving deep. Now, in Lama Alan's book, page 105 to 107, there is a huge list of the type of nyams that may occur, So that's worth reading. Remember, any or all of these or none of these may occur. If they do, especially if you decide to go into solitary retreat, whether that's solitary retreat for a week or 2 weeks, a month, 6 months, whatever you decide, then one of the things you learn is how to deal with nyams. You need to learn how to deal with this before you go into a long retreat. Because if you go into a long retreat, the chances are very high that nyams will arise. So you learn how to deal with that. It's one of the, not just how to do things, but how to deal with these type of difficulties. How do you deal with it? Well, you know, as Dujom Limpa said, it's quite difficult. Let them rise, let them pass. That was all he said. Let them rise, let them pass. No clinging, no engagement with it, no adding to it. Allow them to vanish because they will into the space of them. Just let them vanish. Now, on top of that, Lama Alan always says, doesn't say it in the text, but Lama Alan makes it very clear, that the nyams could come up, could arise within you as a kind of, it will come mentally, but it could be that there's a mental problem, that you're actually suffering from some sort of mental illness. You don't know, do you? You don't know. If you can't deal with it and it's not getting better, then consulting the appropriate physician seems reasonable. And Lama Alan says, do it. If it's a nyam, then dealing with it in this way will disappear. It may come back, but it will disappear. However, if it worries you, then there's nothing wrong with contacting the right type of physician to find out if everything's okay, is there a chemical imbalance going here? Is there something going on? If you get to a stage, there's nothing wrong with that. In particular, pain. Pain can be a nyam. Targeted pain in certain parts of the body, well, in fact, any part of the body, can be a nyam. But it can also be an illness. And Lama Allen gives the example of a student of his who was in a long-term retreat. And for Lama Allen, that means a year or more. That's how he does it. Yeah. So, and he was experiencing pain in the lower right side of his abdomen. It would come and go. And so he observed it. He put the various remedies that we've discussed into practice. It was still there. It was still come and go. And he also noticed he was a bit nauseous. He was a bit grey. At that stage, he said, it's not nyam. There's something wrong with me. He went to the doctor. Turned out he had appendicitis and had to have an operation. And Lama Allen said he had the operation, got recovered, went back into retreat, and he's fine. So what's the takeaway? The takeaway is always use your intelligence. Always use your intelligence. Read and bone up on the type of things that could occur. Know how to deal with it. But particularly pain, it seems to be what I notice more than, you know, make sure that it is a nyam. And if it's not, if you're not sure, then you must always get it checked out. Don't be these people that go, oh, no, I'm in retreat. I know that, especially if you go into long-term retreat, you get something wrong with you. I tell you, the chances are you don't want to come out of retreat. Things are going well. You don't want to go, but you still have to let your intelligence play here. Some of us could have done with being a bit more intelligent at the time, but there you go. Always do that. Any questions about that? No? You can read up about it. It's very interesting, especially the way he compares and contrasts different worldviews. Different worldviews. Because when I first heard about the Tibetans saying this demon and that demon, I was thinking, oh, you know, honestly, these people, you know, there's demons coming out of their nostrils. And then I thought, but you know, if I was to be transported back to the Middle Ages, you know, you would be blaming a lot of stuff on demons. And then I met people who are from various types of cult, religious Christianity. Some of the offshoots, and everything's a demon. Everything that's negative in your life is it. So it's not as if this has gone away in this culture. It hasn't. It really hasn't. So I think being clear about your worldview, but I think it's quite interesting that those group of students, and I can't remember how many. Jenny, can you remember, was it 18 or 20, something like that, students? Something like that, that amount of students. And they came from different parts of the world, right? Not one of them came up with demons, despite Genlan Rinpoche giving them that discussion. Yeah. Okay. Right. So let's do some meditation. So this time, again, the relaxation, the stability, the vividness, that's, you know, I'll go slightly faster through that. Spend a few more minutes on the base breathing and then go on to awareness of awareness. Or should I front load it first? Maybe front load it first. Sorry, I do tend to change my mind halfway through. Sorry, let's just think of this next step. This next step of awareness of awareness. Now, sometimes we talk about awareness of awareness. It's the same thing as saying shamatha without a sign. Up to now, our objects have been the breath and the mind and its contents. Now, there is no object. And so it makes more sense to call this shamatha without a sign. That's far more accurate. what we tend to refer to as awareness, simply because it sounds cool and it's kind of brief. So here, with the first two, your attention was always directed to an object, but with awareness of awareness, really, you're resting in awareness. You're not being aware of an object, like the breath. You're not being aware of an object like the mind and its contents. You're taking one step back and just resting in awareness. Lama Alan tends to say, many things in this world that we perceive through our five senses and many things that we believe with our minds have proved to be untrue, absolutely untrue. Time that goes on, things that we perceive with our senses, we find out they're not what we thought they were. Things that we believed about everything, anything, it's not what we thought. They're just not the same. There's very little that you can really be assured of. But the one thing you can be absolutely assured of is awareness itself. It's the one thing that we can be certain of, the presence of consciousness. The presence of consciousness. During settling the mind in its natural state, there was a time when there was no thoughts. But there's never a time when there's no consciousness. And so, this is one thing you can really, really be sure of. You're not attending to anything. You're resting in your nature. You're resting in awareness. Remember, this type of mind you can describe as clarity. Its nature is clarity. Its function is awareness. Its function is to know. Its function is to cognize. It's the same thing. But normally what we do, we Velcro it to I know this, I know that. But in shamatha without a sign, there is no this, there is no that, but there's still consciousness. And that's where you rest. You rest in the consciousness. You can say, in some texts it says that it's about consciousness being aware of itself. They say that. Consciousness taking itself as the object. But experientially, that's not how you experience it. How you experience it is resting in its own nature. It's not consciousness trying to find itself and then focusing. Not like that. It's simply resting in the consciousness. And as you rest in this awareness, this cognizing, then really what you're doing now is the snorkel has gone. You've got a tank to the end of your back. You can go much deeper now. You can go much deeper. And this particular meditation can take you far deeper. And if you go deep enough into your subtle consciousness, to the substrate, whatever label it's given, is that's when you can get a taste of luminosity, of bliss, of non-conceptuality. You start to get an awareness of your own nature. So even without an object, there's always an awareness. I suppose what you've done here is reducing what you're doing to really the bare nature of consciousness, bare nature. There is nothing there that really is human, to be honest. Your five senses are not being involved. Even your mental sense is not active. There is a stillness. With this particular meditation, there is a stillness. Everything else that may occur, you'll still get thoughts and ideas and things, but they're all moving. You never move. You never move. You're not moving to the mind. You're not moving to the contents of the mind. You're resting in awareness, and that is still. There's a stillness. Anything else is moving, that's still. This is the awareness that comes from life to life. You really don't have to do much about this except unveil it. Let it emerge. You find your stillness and you rest there. Yeah. I think that's reasonable. I think that's reasonable. Okay, let's practice. So please put yourself in a really nice position. If you want to try the supine, please take a few minutes to get yourself ready. Sitting, fine. So drawing the mind inward. Checking the different points of your posture, just correcting as necessary. Allowing your consciousness to sink down, releasing all your tension on the way down. Becoming aware of where your body contacts the earth element, your chair, the floor, where one part of your body touches another part of your body. That's where your awareness is now. And then on each in-breath, each natural in-breath, allow your awareness to emerge and flow through your body, chest, diaphragm, belly. Scanning and releasing any tension, paying particular attention to the face and the brow. Always continuing to breathe normally, continuing to release tension. Attitude of ease and vigilance, remembering how to enhance your vigilance if you're lying down or sitting. Begin now at your feet, noting the tactile sensation from your feet, working up the body to the crown, relaxing and releasing all these sensations on the out-breath. And from now on, trying to keep still. In a moment, taking a deliberate initial breath, filling the belly, the diaphragm, the chest, then releasing, and then allowing the respirations to flow naturally. Imposing no rhythm, no influence, no preference. Your focus here is the cessation of these respirations in the body, wherever they arise. Noting the beginning, the middle, and the end of the breath. Noting if it's long or short, deep or shallow, slow or fast. It seems like a lot, but it's not. It's just a gentle thought. Again and again, counteracting any difficulty by relaxing more deeply on the out-breath, allowing the in-breath to flow in effortlessly like an incoming tide. Changing your awareness now to the rise and fall of the abdomen with the breath. Again, noting the beginning, middle, end of the sensations, counting if it helps, but stay with the sensation of the rise and fall with the breath. Dealing with any dullness or excitation in exactly the same way as before. To increase vividness, becoming aware of the sensation of the breath of the nostrils and the upper lip. Staying with the ongoing flow of that sensation, beginning, middle, end. Counting briefly 1 to 10 if it helps. Dealing with dullness and excitation in the same way. Any problem, left it alone, don't block it, don't become attached, just refocus. And you shift your focus now to gentle vase breath. Keeping your flow of breathing naturally. Allowing on the inhalation, the sensation of the breath to flow down to the bottom of the abdomen, like pouring water into a vase. As you exhale, don't let the abdomen retract completely. Keep it slightly rounded, keep the belly soft. And so maintaining your relaxation, your stillness, your vigilance. Let your eyes be open. Your gaze gentle, unfocused, in a slightly downward direction. Allow the body and mind to really rest in their natural state. If you are observing anything with the mind, gently release that mind. Rest your attention without wavering in the nature of awareness. There is no object to focus on. The mind is loose and free, cognizant, knowing, bright. Just be still and be aware. If this is difficult, then fabricate an object like a flower. Focus on it. Mentally step back into the knowing of that flower. And when the flower disappears, stay with the knowing. The cognizance, the awareness. It's almost like a mental step back. Occasionally, you can increase your stability of attention by concentrating on where you are, this awareness, and then releasing that concentration into relaxation and stillness. That's the way you keep alert with this practice, just occasionally. Increase your stability of attention. Slight concentration, not tightness. Then release back into the knowing. And now keep silent for the next, in the last 10 minutes. Thank you. Of course, we'll do this again tomorrow, but I'll add in Lama Allen's suggestion of a slight note of Vipassana, which he says, very slight note of Vipassana with this, which can really help you really be absolutely sure you are where you think you are. It's very, very interesting. We'll do this tomorrow. It's the same meditation, but with this slight Vipassana input. Okay, so in your discussion groups, just 15 minutes, I'd like you to compare this meditation with the meditation we did yesterday, the settling the mind. Just think about it, compare it. And it's more to do with experience. Do you experience any difference, or does it feel the same? This meditation and the one we did yesterday, do you experience any differences? If so, experientially, what was the difference? That's the focus of your discussion. Enjoy. Enjoy. 15 minutes without listening and meditation. It's got to be agreed. It's got to be agreed. Enjoy. I'll see you in 15 minutes. Okay, thank you. Welcome back. I hope your discussion was fruitful. Really pinpointing the differences between these two meditations, I think it's quite useful. So if anybody would like to feedback, if you did notice any difference, or if you didn't, it's fair enough. If you did, experientially, how did it feel? You know, what was the differences? That type of thing. So anybody want to feedback? You'd be more than... I see, right. Nobody wants to talk, right. Okay. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Right, we'll start with Anne. I was just about to move on quickly.
Oh, you can.
No.
I just thought, you know, it's really that space and nobody wants to say anything. It's just that there's something I struggle with. I don't know if I can explain it. That's the thing. When I'm doing awareness, I'm struggling with it. Awareness, it finds a place. It's in my head. It's behind my eyes. It attaches itself to an eye. And I think, well, you know, this is not where we're supposed to be going. And I'm trying to let go of that and just be in awareness. And I find that tricky.
It is tricky. Yeah. I understand. This is the subtlest way. This is all the way through from breath, settling the mind and awareness, you're doing less. There's less to do on each of these, but that doesn't mean to say it's easy. It's simplified, but not easy. And we're not used, even if you say to someone, what's your mind? You know, what's your mind like? I mean, they just go, you know, it's always difficult. I think there are many ways, they say, to get over that. And that's many times, one of the ways I find it easier is many times a day, many times when I'm in a safe situation, is literally rest in awareness, let go of all objects. Just for a few minutes, but not once, I do it a lot. So what happens then? Well, if you start doing this, so you're in, maybe sitting like this and you're letting everybody else speak, but for the moment, it's like a mental step back. And it's like this bright awareness. There are other things around, but you're not focusing on any of them. And it's quite sharp. And then come back into view, start focusing on things, then go back like this. Very helpful. And then you say to yourself, well, how do I know I'm doing it right? You know, I don't know. Am I doing it right? Well, all of this, especially with this type of practice, it's a process of elimination. You know you're in the right place by what you're not doing. So how do I know I'm in the right place? So you're in your meditation and you let go for a moment, you go, how do I know I'm in the right place? I could be wasting my time. Well, first of all, are you awake? Yes. Are you alive? Yes. Have you focused on any external object? No. Am I caught up with my thoughts? Am I being distracted? No. Are you dull at the moment? Have you got some laxity? You know what I mean? Are you a bit dull? Well, no, I'm kind of sharp. I'm fairly clear. It's quite good. Are you grasping at anything? No. Are you distracted by anything? No. And the last important question, what is the quality of your awareness? And if the quality of your awareness has a kind of brightness to it, a kind of stillness, you're in the right place. You really are in the right place. No one can look inside your head and tell you you're there. But if you're not dead, and you're not asleep, the chances are you're in exactly the place you should be. Personally, I don't go any further than that now. If I'm not asleep and I'm not dead and I rest in awareness, I'm in awareness. If I've got any problems, am I attached to any object? No. Am I caught up in thoughts or disruptions of any type? No. Are you sleepy? Are you dull? I'm speaking to myself. Are you sleepy? Are you dull? No. It's kind of sharp. It's kind of clear. Good. Are you grasping on to anything? No. Are you distracting? No. Last question I ask. What is the quality of your attention? And if you're answering like, well, it's kind of clear. Feels a bit bright. You know, feels a bit right. Where else could you be? Ask yourself. If you've answered all those questions right, where else are you? On Mars? This is how I speak to myself when I was learning this, right? Well, where else are you, Mary? Are you on Mars? Are you in the co-op buying vegetables? No, you're not. You're resting in awareness. Awareness is always there. You don't have to go searching for awareness. You don't have to build it up until it's this level and then it's awareness. No. Awareness permeates everything. So it's a process of letting go of all these objects, letting go of distraction, letting go of disruption, letting go of laxity. It's a process of shedding all of that. And if you shed it, what you're left with is bright, clear, luminous. And you're nowhere else. There's nowhere else you could be. We don't want to get all sci-fi about this. There's nowhere else you would be. You're exactly where you need to be. Sherry.
Yeah, just on that though, could one also be in a place where one is like zoned out, like mentally, or empty thought, like just emptying mind of thoughts? No.
Why not? You're still awake, aren't you? You're not asleep, but you could still be a bit dull, but you're not dull. But the zoned out bit's interesting. When you're zoned out, there's nothing going on at all. There's no.
Yeah.
There is some awareness, obviously, because you're never without it. But it's kind of, but what's the quality of your attention? It's the difference physically. If I was representing this, what you're meant to feel like mentally, representing it physically, zoned out is kind of like this. Yeah? Awareness is like this. It is completely different. And if you can get that taste of awareness a few times, you'll never mistake it again. You never mistake it. Now, there's different qualities. Of course, you have good days, you have bad days. But ask yourself those questions. Tick them off in your mind and then be content where you are. Now, when we do this tomorrow, there's a way of questioning this, as you probably read in Lama Allen's book or practice with him, where you bring in a bit of Vipassana into this. And that's perfect to address this particular problem. Am I really there? Am I zoned out? With this quality of a Vipassana, this questioning, you're exactly what, I mean, there's nowhere else you would be, really. So we'll do that tomorrow. And it should address directly that. Directly. Thank you. Anyone else, Mikel?
Yes, just a few observations. Several of us in the group has a very good experience of the raspberry. Me too. I think it really, really quickly centers my focus and attentions. And at least two of us describe the sort of very quick sort of feeling of being centered and compact. Which has, I mean, I feel like my body, after 5-10 seconds of doing it, my body naturally wants to go a worthy position or something, whatever you call it. It's almost like
a king sitting on a throne. This is how he's in the text.
Even Pendar Tijay and Kumheng, he says, you know, take your seat as a Buddha. And it feels a little bit like that it gives the body a sense of, you know.
It's not as strong with me. I just kind of feel this, but I feel it's doing me some good. And so that's why I include it for sure.
The more you get into the body and sense what's going on emotionally and energetically in that whole part of the system, the easier it also becomes to let go of it.
Yes, yes. And because then, we're not used to identifying these things. If we do speak about them in its kind of vague terms, like, oh, yes, I'm kind of spiritual and I'm a kind, it's vague. But with this pinpoint, this precise investigation, you really know where you are. Yeah.
Terms of difference, it was funny because when we opened the room, we were kind of just sitting there staring at each other, like nobody wanted to talk.
Welcome to my world.
And that really describes it pretty well for me. Like it's really a qualitative difference from what we did yesterday.
Yes.
You know, I've discovered again and again through these years of trying to do this that every time I think I'm doing shamatha, I'm fooling myself. Like there's the thinking, then there's the thinking of the thinking, and then I think I'm getting close there, and then there's the thinking of the thinking of the thinking, but I'm still conceptual, you know, so it's like I'm not there. But then when I get a glimpse of it, it's like it's just such a different quality to it.
So hard to describe. So hard to describe. Thank you, Mikhail. Thank you. Christine?
Yes, hello. I think maybe I got a taste of it and I can feel the stillness, but it's not bright. So isn't it the right awareness?
Yes. Don't worry about bright. Yes. For some people, it will feel bright like a light, but it's not like that. It really is. It's a way to describe it, but really it's about the clarity that comes with luminosity. You know, it's that which makes everything else clear.
Yeah, okay, I understand.
So I tend to think of it as bright because it feels like when I say bright, I don't even mean light. It's the same with luminosity. It's like I'm on the ball here, you know. I'm exactly where I need to be, that kind of clarity.
Yeah.
So luminosity, it seems to have this idea of light, but it's more to do with a reflection. It's more to do with that which makes other things clear.
Okay.
So don't worry about it. And your feeling of it may change as it goes on. You know, as your attention changes, that will change too. But the core, the nub of it is luminosity, not so much light, but luminosity.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That helps me.
Good. See, we have to build up confidence here. Yeah, we spend a lot of time second guessing ourselves. And remember, one of the five obscurations is afflictive. What's the second word? Lost it now.
Uncertainty.
Yeah, uncertainty is okay. Afflictive uncertainty. Don't fall into that. There's enough of that going around. You don't need to.
Okay.
Thank you, Christine.
Thanks.
Talia?
Just on that point, it occurred to me, would that be like mirror? Like, I can't remember whether Lama Yeshe talked about it, but I never met him, but I'm just like in his book, he was talking about the quality of awareness being just like a mirror that reflects things, but doesn't grasping, does not grasp onto.
Yeah. I think that's useful, that kind of reflection, that's talked about a lot. I'm trying to think of Lama teaching. He taught a lot about mirror-like wisdom. There's different types of wisdom. And one of the types of wisdom is called mirror-like wisdom. So I don't know if that's part of what you're thinking. It's not this, but again, mirror is, I think, better to think reflection. I think better for this particular thing. And even the word reflection, it's that which makes things clear. And it's tricky, isn't it? But it's exactly the opposite of dull and lethargic and tiredness and dullness and being distracted. It's the opposite of that. I tend to think of it as being in the zone. You know, don't bother me. I'm here. You know, it feels like that. It's hard to describe. Hard to describe. Thank you. Mikhail?
Yeah, I think what I was trying to say before is my experience is that it's every time I try to describe it or wanted to having it to look somewhere or somehow, that's my conceptual thinking taking over again on a subtle level. And I fool myself into believing, oh, now I found the description of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, at least what I try to do, and I seem to get glimpses of that way, is like to really let go of all that whenever I discover it, and saying, you know, let it be something that arises when all that is gone. And what then is left?
Yes, that's sensible. That's reasonable. There are different aspects of Dharma which are not describable. And they talk about being beyond thoughts, words, and expressions. I'm not sure this is quite there, but it's close. It's close to that idea.
It's a sense of not, I don't feel like luminosity either, but maybe more a sense of transparency, like everything is transparent. Nothing attaches to nothing. Like there's the look through everything.
Yeah. Sounds good.
That's just a conceptual description anyway. So anyway.
I just remember going, we used to see Alan Wallace about 20 minutes at once a week when you were doing this in long retreat. And he was asking me to, particularly about this, he said, well, how do you know you're there? I said, I really don't, but I know where I'm not. And I gave this huge list. And he said, if all that's true, you're exactly in the right place. And then later on reading different texts, it's very clear. It's very clear. So it's often about shedding. So when it's about shedding concepts, when it's about shedding all these add-ons to the nature of reality, well, say the nature of consciousness at this stage, then, you know, a lot of Dharma is often expressed, you must have noticed, in the negative. You must have noticed that. It's not this. It's not that. Yeah? And the reason that they do a lot of that is because we are so full of what we know. The knowledge that Dharma brings, it's not added on to what we already know. It's not an add-on. Dharma is looking at what you already know and realize that's nonsense. That's misknowing. And that's got to go. Yeah? So it's about shedding that and then building up with wisdom, really. It's about that. So sometimes when you're expressing things, it's easier to say what it's not. Anyway, I rabbit on sometimes. Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Yes, Rina.
Mary, I just want to say thank you very much for that list of what it's not that you are your way. Because, you know, my experience of that meditation was that I struggled a little bit. Well, I struggled. And that afflictive uncertainty creeped back in. You know, I kind of managed to let that go in mind and its contents. And then it crept back in. So I just wanted to, you know, that list that you just went through of what it's not, you know, are you on Mars? Are you awake? Are you alive? No, really helpful. Thank you.
And I've heard Lama Alan say, are you awake? Are you asleep? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? I mean, it's not that whole list, but that list, I add on to that list. And in the end, it's always the last one that clinches it for me. What is the quality of my awareness? And then there's no way you can make a mistake, in my opinion. I mean, maybe, but I think it'd be hard to make a mistake. Okay, well, we're a wee bit over, but thank you very much for this afternoon. Tomorrow's a full day. So we've got Bodhicitta on equanimity, making sure we really understand what equanimity is. There's two levels of equanimity. We'll discuss that within the context. We'll do this meditation again, but this time bring the Vipassana into it. And then we'll look at other things like, you know, how do you know when you've achieved shamatha? Things like that. And any other questions you can bring in. So it's a whole day tomorrow. I'm personally looking forward to it. I hope you are. Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay.
So thank you very much.
No, it's brilliant. Thank you. So remembering the motivation you had at the beginning, bringing your understanding of karma right to the front, realize this is the closest, that motivation is the closest you can come to real karma. This is what karma is. And so what you've done here, so meritorious, you want it to be safe, you want it to blossom and benefit you in the future. And so dedicating it is, it's very important. So trying just in a moment, just aiming the imagining this this lightning bolt of your merit going towards what you wanted to achieve. And then imagine you achieving it. It's very helpful. And so sort of prayers, so we can do some prayers. Deva Dinyurda Lama Sange Drukyurne Drova Chinkyang Malupa Eki Sala Gupasho. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. Yancho Semcho Grimpo She Ma Ke Padam Ke Gyur Che Ke Pa Nyam Pa Me Pa Yam Mo Ni Gong Du Pel War Shu. May the supreme jewel Bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow. May that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. For as long as space endures, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. So once again, thank you very much. Have a lovely evening. I hope the weather is as good with you as it is with me. Enjoy. See you tomorrow.